O respectful one, a wife is so helpful that she is called the better half of a man's body because of her sharing in all auspicious activities. A man can move without anxiety, entrusting all responsibilities to his wife. Purport by His Divine Grace, Esi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. By the Vedic injunction, the wife is accepted as the better half of a man's body because she is supposed to be responsible for discharging half of the duties of the husband. A family man has a responsibility to perform five kinds of sacrifices called Pancha Yajna, in order to get relief from all kinds of unavoidable sinful reaction incurred in the course of his affairs. When a man becomes qualitatively like the cats and dogs, he forgets his duty in cultivating spiritual values, and thus he accepts his wife as a sense gratificatory agency. When the wife is accepted as a sense gratificatory agency, personal beauty is the main consideration. And as soon as there is a break in personal sense gratification, there is disruption or divorce. But when husband and wife aim at spiritual advancement by mutual cooperation, there is no consideration of personal beauty or the disruption of so-called love. In the material world, there is no question of love. Marriage is actually a duty performed in mutual cooperation as directed in the authoritative scriptures for spiritual advancement. Therefore, marriage is essential in order to avoid the life of cats and dogs who are not meant for spiritual enlightenment. Today we are reading from Canto 3 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 14, entitled Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. Text number 19. Herein, by the inconceivable arrangement of providence, Diti is approaching her husband, Kashyapa Muni, at an inauspicious time. Kashyapa Muni, in response, is explaining, according to Shastra and according to his own very deep realizations, the importance of a wife and husband living together by religious principles. He's describing the wife as better half of a man's body because she shares the auspicious activities. Bhagavatam describes also in the Grihastha ashram, a wife is like a fort who protects the husband from the onslaughts of Maya. And similarly, the husband protects the wife from the exploitation of society and its ways. So what Prabhupada is explaining here is really a perfect marriage. Is a marriage based on mutual responsibility for each other, for life, where under the direction of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, we understand clearly what is the purpose of life and what are the pitfalls in progressing toward that perfection. The husband and wife live together to protect one another from falling a prey to Maya. The husband and wife encourage one another, inspire one another, enliven one another in performing their duties, all of their duties, their social duties, occupational duties, family duties, in such a way that they are always harmonized in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada explains that when the husband and wife are both performing their spiritual duties to one another and to the children properly, then it is to be said that the home becomes Vaikuntha. The home is the spiritual world. It is to be said that a faithful wife who is assisting her husband in executing spiritual activities is to be considered as Lakshmi, that the husband is so fortunate he is actually living with the goddess of fortune. In a sense, that she is representing Lakshmi and she will bring all good fortune. And similarly, the husband who does not exploit the wife, but who protects the wife with great care and attention, is considered to be the representative of Lord Narayan. And the setting becomes the spiritual world. Thakur Bhaktivinoda had this realization in his beautiful song, Shuddha Bhakata Charanadenu. He expresses that when he comes home and he sees his family engaged in devotional activities, he actually can see that his home is transformed into Goloka Vrindavan, beyond Vaikuntha, the highest of the Vaikunthas, Goloka Vrindavan. Now Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his wife Bhagavati Devi, and he had 10 children. Can you imagine being a mother for 10 children? Just giving birth to that many children is quite a service, to say the least. What to speak of taking care of them? One child, what to speak of two children, practically drives a woman mad. She had 10 children. But because the husband and the wife were raising their children in such a spirit of devotion, the house wasn't a miserable place of anxiety. It was the spiritual world. Fifth canto, it is said, Pitana sasyaj janinina sasyaj, that one's duty as a parent is that the child never takes birth in the material world again. To create such a spiritual atmosphere at home that the children naturally develop love for Krishna. That's actually the duty of grihasthas. Prabhupada taught us that when you have children, we should not think that they are our children. They are Krishna's children. And he is so kindly entrusting them under our care for our protection. Why does Krishna entrust a particular child in the care of a devotee? Specifically, to give that child the chance of perfecting his or her life, to never take birth again in this material world, but to attain the eternal abode of the Lord. In order to do that, the husband and the wife must create such a spiritual environment around the child by which the child naturally is always remembering Krishna favorably. Srila Prabhupada explains in his own life, when he was such a small child, every morning when he would wake up, he would see his mother and father performing the Mangal Arti to their family deities of Radha Govinda. Every day. He would see his mother always cooking for the deities, then serving the family after offering to the deities. The father would be doing puja. Every evening, they would invite many sadhus to the house. The mother would be cooking so nicely, offering to the deities. The father would be serving to the sadhus. He would have his children assist him. And then little Prabhupada, he would see his father with folded palms beseeching the sadhus for a blessing. Not for more money, not for better facilities. He would only ask for one blessing. Please give the blessing that my child will be a pure devotee of Sri Radharani. That Radharani's blessings be upon this child. So this is how the little child was grown up. He didn't see the mother and father in conflict with one another. He saw the mother and father serving Krishna with love together. Without hypocrisy. Haribo. I think the children like this class very much. They're discussing amongst one another that this is very good. Of course, the tendency is that every husband wants his wife to be like Sita, but then the husband has to become like Ram in order for things to work properly. And similarly, a wife wants the husband to be like Ram, but she should be like Sita. This is the example of Sita and Ram. They not only displayed their pure spiritual love for one another, but they also revealed the ideal of what husband and wife should strive to be. And that means sense gratification is not really a consideration in the marriage. Responsibility for one's true welfare is the responsibility. Therefore, when Ram Chandra was banished to the forest for 14 years, Sita was given the opportunity to remain in Ayodhya and live comfortably waiting for her husband. No, my duty is to serve you. My duty is to assist you no matter what. She presented so many arguments, but Ram could not tolerate the idea of Sita coming to the forest with him. Do you not understand what it is like living in the forest? You have been living in Ayodhya. You've been living in Mithila. Your father is king on soft beds with silken sheets. You'll have to sleep on the hard ground. At the best, your bed will be dry leaves. You're wearing beautiful garments of a princess. You'll have to wear the hard, coarse bark of trees. You've been protected so nicely by nice palaces. You'll be subjected to burning summers, freezing winters, torrential rains. There will be lions and leopards and tigers and poisonous snakes and mosquitoes and other biting insects. What to speak of all the rakshasas that are roaming around in the forest these days? It is not a place for you. But Sita, she had such a devotion, such a love, and such a sense of responsibility. She told Sri Ramchandra that for me, Hari, that for me, to live in Ayodhya without you would be like living in hell. For me to live in heaven without you would be like living in hell. And to live in hell without you would be better than heaven. That was her dedication. And ultimately she convinced Ram, with tears in her eyes, she said, when my father put my hand in yours at the time of marriage, he vowed that in health or disease, in success or failure, for better or for worse, in all circumstances, I was to faithfully serve you. You cannot make my father a liar. I'm going with you. So Ram said, please come. So that is Sita. There was not a question of material considerations disturbing her relationship of faithful service. At the same time, to protect Sita, when Ravana took her away, Sri Ramchandra was ready and willing to declare one of the greatest wars in the history of the world just to protect Sita. So that is husband and wife. That is the ideal that humanity should strive for. In the traditional sense, when there is children, there's such a responsibility for those children. It's immense. In fact, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, just to emphasize the great responsibility of having children, could someone close that door, please? Speaking about children, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if I could give one child Krishna consciousness, I would have many, many hundreds of children. But the fact that he took sannyas is the testimony that it's not easy. It's a tremendous responsibility. If only human beings understood what an intense responsibility it is to have a child. Before God, and also karmically. Because if we raise the child in such a way that due to our neglect or our defect, they have the propensity for sinful activities, we are responsible and we share the reactions of their sins because of our neglect. Such responsibility. The child should naturally love Krishna. And in order for the child to feel love of Krishna, especially at a very young age, the child must feel the love of the parents and must be able to identify or recognize that the love of the parents is the origin of that, is their love for Krishna. They feel Krishna's love coming through the parents. Then naturally they love Krishna. That's what Prabhupada taught. His parents loved him dearly. They cared for him so much. He told stories about when he wanted a little toy gun, yes, and he cried, and his father gave him one, and he still cried. And the father said, what, I gave you? He said, but I still have another hand. So he gave him another. So it wasn't that he was spoiling him. He was just showing gestures of love that a child can recognize and understand. But at the same time, he saw that their life, their soul, their everything was the worship of Govinda and Radharani. Therefore, it's natural to understand that when the parents love Krishna, Haribo Mataji, when the parents love Krishna, that they will make the atmosphere at home in such a way that the child could feel Krishna's love through them. If the parents are hypocritical, it turns the children away from God. If they see the parents chanting japa and worshiping the deities, but neglecting them, being harsh and cruel to them, they make a connection. This is what kind of person worships Krishna. And we have seen, you know, even in our own society, where parents have been neglectful or not performing their responsibilities properly, the children have a very difficult time chanting the names because they connect it. They connect the chanting of the holy name of Krishna to cruel behavior because they're chanting and then they're hitting me. They're chanting and they're neglecting me. What a responsibility it is. That's the first and foremost duty of a parent, that the child never takes birth again in this material world. Now, generally, in traditional society, the husband has to work. And it is the wife's responsibility to be at home and actually take care of the children, which is a 24-hour job. Yes, it's very difficult. I remember in my own life as a child, my father would work, and then he would have his friends and everything else, and my mother was just with us, day and night, just doing every little thing she could. And actually, this is actually the noisiest temple room in ISKCON. The mother's duty is really, that's her service to the husband. To maintain such a sweet, nice spiritual atmosphere at home. And therefore, the husband is grateful. And that is Kashyapa Muni's principle here. When the husband and wife live together based on pure spiritual principles, then the wife and the husband are actually assisting one another toward the ultimate goal of life, Vaikuntha. And Prahlad Maharaj explains if they don't, if they're not performing these responsibilities, then the household life is just a deep, dark well where there's no water. There's only imminent suffering. And Srila Prabhupada explains really the basis between spiritual grihastha life and material grihastha life is whether service to one another and service to Krishna is the center or sense gratification. And in today's world, there is no such education as this. Man and woman come together on the basis, what Prabhupada explains, physical beauty, personality. Actually, I saw a poll, which was quite interesting. It was a poll of so many tens and thousands of people. And what men in American society look for in a wife and what women look for in a man in a good husband. And the number one thing a man looks for in a wife is physical beauty. And the number one thing that a woman looks for in a husband is a protective personality. Haribol. So in that sense, it seems that women are more spiritually aware than men, at least potentially. That is the condition of our society. Women want protection. They need protection. So herein it is described so nicely that when sense gratification is the center between husband and wife, sense gratification is temporary. It never satisfies us. And when the sense gratification is disturbed, What do we have in common anymore? Physical beauty. Who remains beautiful for long? Sometimes a woman's very, very beautiful. Then after she has baby or something, she changes very much. That happens. Or just in age, they change. Men change. Then there's nothing in common anymore. It's the glittering glare of illusion. Actually, Prabhupada explained that sense with his father, too. Prabhupada actually said he wanted to marry a beautiful girl, and his father married him to a girl who wasn't beautiful. And Prabhupada said, "Why are you doing this?" He said, "You will understand in the future. I'm doing this because it's best for your spiritual life." We shouldn't be attached to these things. We should be attached to our responsibility. Prabhupada says there's actually no love in the material world. The so-called romance or so-called love of this world is an illusion. One day you're looking and seeing the stars and the moon in each other's eyes on the shore of the Pacific Ocean. And a couple years later, you're seeing red-hot coals in each other's eyes in the divorce court. 70% of American marriages end like that within 3 years, according to federal statistics. 70% of American marriages are divorced within 3 years. Now, what is divorce? I mean, it's really a trauma. A large percentage of people who go through the crisis of divorce suffer depression and suicidal tendencies. It's one of the most traumatic experiences in an American's life that causes severe depression, which is a serious mental illness. Divorce is horrible. It's horrible for the husband and wife, but it's the most horrible if there's children. 92% of children in juvenile delinquent prisons are coming from broken homes, coming from parents who are separated or divorced. See, children don't like. He's hearing my words and crying for all those children who have to suffer like this. Yeah. 92% of juvenile delinquents in prisons are coming from divorced parents. That says something. It's a tragic experience. If the parents have any real sense of love for the child, they will somehow or other get along, stop arguing, stop fighting, stay together for a higher principle. That is dignity. That is integrity. That is civilization. That is responsibility. And through that process, actual respect develops between the husband and wife. And from that respect, especially if it is even in material society, when they pass through all obstacles and somehow or other make it together with respect, they actually develop real deep affection for one another. It usually comes where the affection is real and deep when they're in their 60s or 70s in today's world. You know, that's something that has to be earned. So if the goal of life is Krishna consciousness, the responsibility of marriage is to be taken very, very seriously. What Prabhupada's really saying here is marriage is not for romance, it's not for enjoyment, it's for responsibility. That is the relationship. We are responsible to each other. And if we both play that role together, then Krishna manifests himself in our lives. And Krishna manifests himself within our children's lives. Is there any questions? Yes.
Mom, I have two questions. later on in this chapter, Prabhupada criticizes Kashyapani and his inability to stay away from his wife. And he compares him to Haridas Thakur, with Kashyapani on the negative side of the comparison. Later on, in the 8th canto, Prabhupada describes Kashyapani as Jagat Guru. I think it's actually even in the Bhagavatam and in Sanskrit. And he's the father with his other wife, Aditi's sister, Aditi, he's the father of Amini. And there's even some shlokas which say that Kashyap then became So I'm trying to understand. And then also, Maitreya, who's speaking this, was criticized earlier in the Bhagavatam as being a Jnana Mishra Bhakta, or Jnana Bhakta. And at the same time, he was also glorified as being the Jagat Guru and qualified to instruct Vibhu, because of his seniority even above Uddhava, who may have had more realization. And so you get this simultaneous all throughout the Vedic scriptures, this glorification of personalities, and especially in the Swami Granthas, you get criticism of those very same personalities in comparison with the residents of Vrindavan. And so I'm wondering how to understand this general point, but also specifically with Kashyapani.
That is why we require a guru and sadhu. Otherwise, apparent contradictions are there in the Vedas. Some scholars from university, I believe from Canada, came to see Prabhupada and asked, why is there so many contradictions in the commentaries of the Acharyas? And Prabhupada said, there are no contradictions in the commentaries of the Acharyas. Hare Krishna. That was all he said. He said, is it because you cannot understand? So that is why tad vijnanartham sugurum eva abhigacchet. We really cannot understand Vedas properly without gurus. So the great acharyas and the Bhagavatam itself explains certain situations according to what they're what is trying to be taught. Yes. Kashyapa Muni is a divine personality. He's obviously not an ordinary person. To give birth to Vamanadev, to be the father of the demigods, he's not an ordinary personality. Even we find Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is born of Vishnu directly, without a mother. He's Atmabhu. But still, we read that he does things. Yes? His daughter, Vak, he chased. But still, the six sons of Marichi, when they ridiculed him for doing that, they had to fall down into the birth of demons because they criticized a great soul. Even though factually the great soul was doing something that wasn't right. Sometimes the Lord wants to instruct the world even through great souls. Look at Lord Shiva when he chased after Mohini Murti. But he's Mahadev, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. Of course it was Vishnu who he was chasing after, but still the way he did it was quite embarrassing. But he wasn't even embarrassed. Yes, Krishna's power is beyond mine. Why should I be embarrassed? So sometimes the Lord, but that the commentaries of that section of Mohini Murti, it's actually explaining the power, you know, the power of attraction. So we have to understand that when the Bhagavatam and the Acharyas explain, they explain sometimes the same incidents from different levels. From one level, you know, these people are great Acharyas. They're very, very great personalities. In this case of Kashyapa, he's a very great person. And therefore he should be glorified and understood from that point of view. But from another level, from the level of teaching human society, you know, what's right and what's wrong, you know, he's acting wrong. So yes, we'll find this many times. There's different levels of teachings. In the case of Kashyapa Muni, it's really happening, not because of just ordinary Mahamaya. It's actually the orchestrated plan of the Lord. He's just an instrument. So he cannot be criticized. But to teach people moral principles and sense control, we can describe it from that point of view of how he's actually in a lamentable condition. Yes? It's not that Jai and Vijay, two gatekeepers of Vaikuntha, who are specifically coming down to this earth. And Jai and Vijay, let's look at them. They're criticized like anything for criticizing the four Kumaras. Yes? But actually, it was the will of the Lord. From a lower level, yes, they were doing the wrong thing, and we must understand how they were wrong, why they were wrong, so that we won't criticize Vaishnavas. Yes? But from a higher level of understanding, Prabhupada says that Krishna likes to fight. And if Krishna's going to fight, he fights with his devotees. He's not going to fight with just anybody. He fights with great devotees. So therefore, it was Krishna's will. If it wasn't for Jai and Vijay falling, then Narsingadev wouldn't have appeared. Varahadev wouldn't have appeared. Ramchandra wouldn't have appeared. Krishna wouldn't have appeared. Because according to the demigods appealing to the Lord to appear, it was because of these demons. Yes? Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Shishupal, Dantavakra. And the Lord appears because he wants to display his wonderful pastimes to the whole world. So this is actually the orchestrated desire of the Lord. The Lord impelled Vijay and Vijay to commit this criminal activity, in one sense, to facilitate his pastimes. So Jai and Vijay are glorious. But at the same time, from another level, we understand, you know, the mistakes and how even people in such an exalted position can fall down if they make these mistakes. And Kashyapa was an instrument. It's not that Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha can take birth from, you know, Vijay Sharma in Punjab. I mean, for them to take birth, they had to take birth from very, very, very powerful personalities. Yes? So, yes, Diti, you know, she was overwhelmed with this desire at an inauspicious time. And Kashyapa Muni fell down to it, even though he knew it was wrong. So from one level, we can understand the dangers of material enjoyment. The result of sense gratification is giving birth to Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. And what do Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu represent? Suffering. They cause so much suffering to others. But we can also understand this symbolically. Every time we give in to sinful activities, then we're actually giving birth to a Hiranyaksha or Hiranyakashipu in the form of suffering karma that's going to come upon us. And upon others too. Yes? It's an analogy. Analogy doesn't dispute the historical significance, but there is an analogy here. That every time you fall down to sinful activities, you're giving birth to a miserable condition of karma, to yourself and to others. You're giving birth to a Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu in your own little way, who's going to cause problems. At the same time, it's a historical event. So if we're going to discuss it from the point of view of the lesson to be learned, yes, Kashyapa Muni was wrong in this instance. But if we understand it from the higher platform of the Lord's Leela, and whose instruments within the Lord's Leela, then we have to understand the greatness of Kashyapa Muni. We have to understand it in context. If Kashyapa Muni took birth as Vasudeva and Devaki, we can understand, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Dasarath and Kausalya also. It's the same spirit of the same personality that is continuous in these great personalities. So in that way, we must understand it from various levels of consciousness, various levels of instructing and teaching. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Actually?
That actually does answer my question, yes.
Because this Srimad Bhagavatam, the Acharyas, the real reason that this is happening is because the Lord is merciful. That's actually the answer. Look at the difference between Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam. Vedavyasa is explaining the same situations in very different ways, right? In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa is explaining a story to invoke pure, unalloyed devotional service in somebody. In Mahabharata, he may explain the same story in a way to invoke basic human morality or chivalry in a person, which really is a very lesser platform. Doesn't even address pure unalloyed devotion. Yes? Why? Because he's merciful to everybody. He's trying to lift up these people, and he's also trying to perfect the lives of people up here. So the Lord is merciful. And the Lord is speaking this, and the personalities who are speaking within the scriptures, they are instruments of the Lord's mercy. So they are explaining different things in different ways to teach us different lessons.
You asked if I really understood, so I just want to make sure.
Yes. Yes. Not only what's good for you, but when you're teaching another. Even Krishna's leelas. When Prabhupada was teaching Krishna's leelas to, when he would speak about a leela of Krishna to just an ordinary
non-devotee, he would present it in a certain way. And when presenting it to a devotee who has surrendered his life, there's a much higher dimension. One lila might just teach us a moral principle. Another could be teaching us very, very high ecstatic rasas of love. Yes? So an expert preacher is a person who actually understands what a person needs to hear. And for us, actually, as devotees, all these different aspects should be understood simultaneously, because that's what's being given to us, all these different levels. Let us take Durvasa Muni. I mean, he's really criticized, isn't he? how he was so angry at Ambarish Maharaj, right? He wanted to kill him. All he did is drink one little teaspoon of water. Yes, he drank one teaspoon of water. He wanted to kill him for that. He created a fiery monster. He was outraged. Yes, he had to run away from the Sudarshan Chakra for a year. So from that point of view, Durvasa Muni is like a real fallen yogi. Can't control his anger, and anger is born of lust, and you can create it. That's a lesson. That's a lesson for us to follow. That Ambarish was just a simple bhakta, and Durvasa Muni had such immense mystic powers. But which is higher? Even with the greatest immense mystic powers, still, without the mercy of Krishna, you can't overcome Trivedam Narakashidam Dwaram Nashitam Atmana Kama Kurdas Tatalobas Tasmarita Triyanti. Lust, anger, and greed. Very difficult. But in other places we find, who is Durvasa Muni? He's an avatar of Lord Shiva. And who is Lord Shiva? Vaishnavanam Yatashambhu. He's the greatest Vaishnava. When Durvasa Muni came to Vrindavan, Radharani cooked for him and served him with such love and devotion, and he actually gave Radharani the benediction that whatever she cooked would taste like nectar, and anyone who eats her food would never ever get sick. So is Durvasa Muni just a regular uncontrolled yogi who's just murdering innocent grihasthas? What? No, he's a fantastically elevated great soul. Somehow or other, Lord Shiva took the form of Shankaracharya to mislead people. He becomes Durvasa Muni to teach the world good lessons, even by his misbehavior. He's not just like you and me getting angry. Otherwise, he wouldn't be in the Srimad Bhagavatam again and again. He's a great soul. If Durvasa Muni came, he's a great Vaishnava, actually. Durvasa Muni came to this room in the temple, and what you did to Ambarish Maharaj, you'd fall down. I mean, Radharani, when she met Durvasa Muni, that was long after he tried to kill Ambarish Maharaj. It was after the Pandavas, they were all afraid because he might curse them because they didn't have food for him at the Kamyavan forest. Huh? So we have to understand it in perspective. These are actually glorious personalities. From one level, we glorify them. Durvasa Muni was born of Atri Muni and Anasuya. Very great personality. What to speak of Kashyapa Muni, the father of the Lord. So we can see him from his elevated Vaishnav position, or we could see him from the point of view of the lessons that are trying to be taught to us through his particular role in the Leela of the Lord. Another example. in the same, which it's almost, okay, this, I'll end with this example, because I know that everyone has to go to their prescribed duties. Ashwatthama killed the five children of Draupadi. Draupadi was weeping, crying. Arjuna went and captured Ashwatthama after he neutralized the Brahmastra, tied him up, threw him at Draupadi's feet. Yes? Draupadi said, Bhima said, kill him immediately. And Draupadi said, no, let him go. Don't harm him. No harm should be done to him. Because his mother has only one son, and that's him. And she shouldn't have to suffer like I'm suffering. I know what it's like for a mother to lose her children. She should not suffer like me. Now, if you study that chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find that in different purports, Prabhupada says very apparently contradictory things. In one purport, he's saying because she was a woman, she was sentimental. Right? In another purport, he was saying because she's a woman, she had a very soft heart and she was such a pure devotee, she was feeling compassion to others. So in one place, she's actually being practically condemned for just being a sentimentalist. The man should be punished. Right? But in another place, she's glorified for her soft-hearted Vaishnav quality of compassion. So which one is she? Tukaram Prabhu, question for you. Is she just a sentimental person who's just over, whose rational intelligence is just overcome by mundane sentiments? Or is she a great compassionate Vaishnavi? Prabhupada says both. Which one is she? No.
You want me to answer?
Yes.
Based on what I've learned from you and your answer, I would then understand that Prabhupada was giving some kind of a social commentary on the qualities of men and women, and we're learning some lessons about things to watch out for, and how men have to be discriminatory, and sometimes women may be prone to inordinate compassion due to their womanly nature. At the same time, we would see that Draupadi was a great Vaishnavi, and therefore she was the
perfect answer. Imperfect question, perfect answer. Yes, so that's a very, very graphic example. In different purports, Prabhupada's chastising her and praising her for doing the same thing. Because he's explaining from different levels. From the higher level, she's simply a great devotee, just expressing love and compassion. But from a more instructive level, on basic human behavioral patterns that are meant to be cultivated for pure devotion, she was acting inappropriately. She was simultaneously inappropriate and perfectly appropriate from different levels. So similarly with Kashyapa Muni, Maitreya Rishi, and these great souls. Obviously, Maitreya Rishi on one level, because of his behavior and his associations, he was on this level, but the fact that, you know, he's able to speak such transcendental knowledge and the greatest, greatest personalities are learning from him, we can understand he's here also. Sometimes his behavior is like this, but his actual position is like this. And because of behavior like this, he's teaching us what not to be. But because of his position like this, he's honored and glorified. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.